Welcome to MGO Podcast 12.27. We stuffed him in a trash can and it was fun! Welcome. Today's the day on the MGO Blog podcast where we consider whether it's crazier that Michigan has been to 6 of the last 8 Sweet 16s or 4 of the last 8 Elite 8s. Because they're in another one after beating Florida State again 76-58 in a game that didn't feel that close.
Oh, this is the absolute...
It wasn't.
This is like the perfect game because I had to like run a Passover Seder during the middle of it. So it was like the perfect game to, you know, just be able to kind of check in every once in a while and then like, okay, same thing's going on. I'll just continue with my night.
Speaking of continuing with your night, this is a segue into the sponsors.
Well, thank you for that, Brian. Also, thank you to Underground Printing for making all this possible. Check out their wide selection of officially licensed Michigan fan gear, their 3-store locations in Ann Arbor, or learn about their custom apparel business at undergroundshirts.com. So also don't forget our associate sponsors, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residency in Ann Arbor Downtown, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Information Entropy, the Raw Power app for iOS by Gentleman Coders, and Homeshore Lending, who is once again sponsoring all of MGO Blog's tournament coverage this year. And finally, we are recording on SignalWire, and I learned some new tricks on here. So ready for this, guys?
Oh, what? Man.
What was that?
That was Darren Ravel. Here, I also got you saying what?
What? I see. Yes.
Thank you, SignalWire.
Very luxurious sound.
Yeah. Anyway, sign up before April 30th at SignalWire.com and use the code Muppets as SignalWire will buy lunch for your first team meeting. And by the way, apologies for no Muppets this week.
Yeah. So Florida State gets in an early hole and it's an 11-point halftime deficit and everybody is basically saying this should probably be 20. And that was kind of my thought at the time as well, just because Michigan had so clearly won the shot quality battle that even though the fact they were shooting 33% from the floor couldn't forestall an 11-point lead at halftime.
Yeah, I mean, you had some weird, like Michigan's missing dunks and some layups, and it was just kind of a weird first half on offense, but they're still just totally in control of this game because, I mean, I don't know... I don't know how you attack this team when you've got FSU's roster construction, and I don't think Leonard Hamilton did either, because whatever that was didn't work. And, I mean, I was really focused heading into this game on the fact that FSU is really reliant on transition offense, and I think that that bore itself out pretty well in this game in terms of, like, if they did not get out, there were a couple early Scotty Barnes buckets in transition where it was like, maybe he can get out and run. And there was just none of that for the last like 30 minutes of the game. And in half court, it was, you got to the end of the first half and they got a jacked up 2-pointer off a screen and the announcers go like, totally nuts that they ran offense, and it was like, what? Like, they set a pick and got, like, kind of the worst shot you could get out of it, and it just happened to drop in. And this is not a good, like, off-the-dribble shooting team, and, like, that was their best offensive possession of the half? Let's go. So it was just these teams didn't feel like they were in the same league, and it's wild to say that about a, you know, like, 4-seed that was a top 15 team in the country heading in.
Yeah, and so Michigan, their highest usage player is Brandon Johns.
He's active, man.
14 on 13 shooting possessions, has 3 offensive rebounds, a couple of assists, a couple turnovers, and a couple steals, one of which led to a breakaway dunk. And then the first bucket of the second half was him going high low, and he was in the high post, and he was able to like drive on Koprivica and then up fake him, come under for one of those Brandon Johns buckets, you know, that have happened kind of periodically throughout his career, but never consistently. And it kind of feels like maybe we're on the verge of some kind of breakthrough here, which we've said several times before, but this time we really mean it.
Yeah, I mean, the minutes are there for him at this point, which has always been, I think, a huge obstacle for him to just putting it all together is that, I mean, when you have a guy where the team, I mean, even after this game, they're talking about how they're like constantly pumping him up to be like, you can do this, man. And like, so Johns clearly has some like stuff to work through with confidence and whatever. And the easiest way to do that is to work through it on the court. And just with the level of talent and the way it's been distributed across positions on this team, he hasn't had the opportunity to really work through stuff because Michigan has had, you know, Isaiah Livers there where he's reliable. And instead you've got Johns being able to, I mean, knowing he's going to play at least 20 minutes and be able to work through, you know, he has like an ugly turnover in there and at the end of a shot clock where he's trying to feed it to Hunter Dickinson and can't get it to him. And then, you know, jacks up a contested miss, but he's so active and, you know, generates extra possessions. And one thing that I've really noticed with him and that jumps off the page when you go to his stat sheet is in his four starts, starting with the Ohio State game in the Big Ten tournament, he has had 8, 8, 4, and 6 free throw attempts. This dude is a load to handle athletically. Florida State, with their kind of rotund power forward who was about as big as him, you know, that was a real issue for Raekwon Gray. And Johns is more aggressive than Livers in terms of drawing the, I mean, especially with the way he attacks the glass too, he is a guy who's going to draw fouls. So in a different way than Livers, he is providing some serious matchup problems. And in this Florida State game with the foul trouble that they got into, it had a real impact from the jump.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that this is like the first time that they've had an opportunity to like give him a few days of practice where like the team can like, you know, build him into the office because we lose Livers and then we go right into the Big Ten tournament, right? Or I guess it's right in the middle of the Big Ten tournament. Then we go right into the tournament after that. And this is the first time they actually got to kind of sit down and build some offense around him and kind of, you know, rekey the team for him. And I thought that we saw that. I thought that they had some things drawn up in order to challenge FSU down low and to draw those fouls. And it worked. I mean, FSU was in foul trouble really early in this game.
Well, and you saw a lot of that, I think, in the second half. I mentioned the high post, right? So Michigan is flashing Johns to the high post, and sometimes that's turning into entry passes. So he had an entry pass to Davis for a dunk. Sometimes that's turning into his own offense, and sometimes he did get it stripped from him once on this. But he's bouncy in the low post, so that kind of floater game that he has, I think, is probably something that's going to be sustainable because those are shorter shots than, like, you know, a Mike Smith floater. Just in terms of where the elevation is, they're less likely to be blocked. And he does have a post game where he looks like he's been coached by Juwan Howard for a couple years now, right? Like, you kind of see what Austin Davis is able to do with his limited athleticism, and you're kind of seeing hints of that in a much more athletic guy in Brandon Johns.
Yeah, I'm going to be very curious to see. I mean, we'll obviously talk about the UCLA matchup more in the next segment, but I'm curious to see, since UCLA is prone to going quite small, whether Johns will get some minutes at center in that game, because he's been impressive holding up in the post, I think, when the matchup is right. But for him to be playing like this, I mean, it's wild for Michigan to lose a top three player on their team and just be cruising into the Elite Eight. I don't know. It's hard to say enough about the coaching job Juwan Howard has done, but also for Brandon Johns to stick with it like this when a lot of guys considering both a coaching change and getting jerked between positions, for him to kind of wait and now be getting his opportunity and be flourishing the way he has is really cool to watch.
We mentioned Johns in this context, but for Juwan as well, that like this was the first time we've seen him in his coaching career have, you know, an opportunity to plan between weekends, right? Like, we didn't get a playoff last year, and like they went right into the Sweet 16, or right into the 16 game, you don't really need to plan for Texas Southern. So, like, this is the first time we actually seen Juwan have that time to plan out for one specific team. And remember, Beilein was awesome at that. And it's kind of impressive to see that continuation.
Yeah, so one thing he mentioned during the halftime interview briefly is that they had spent a lot of time drilling what happens after ball denial, which is, of course, what really got them against Illinois, that and the drop coverage. So when FSU was denying on the outside, they had an array of back cuts. They changed their offense, so they had the center at the top of the key kind of initiating stuff. And then they were just able to, like, fake a back cut and then come back out and actually get into the offense. So all that ball denial that FSU was putting so much effort into didn't really slow down Michigan's offense. So there were, like, what, two or three ugly possessions where Michigan ends up getting up some slop in the whole game. And this is a very aggressive defense that switches 1-5, and they did a really good job fronting Hunter Dickinson so that he couldn't take advantage of these mismatches too often. And they wanted to force Michigan into a bunch of ISO. And they forced him into 9 ISO possessions, but that's not really that much given the way Florida State plays. And Michigan runs this beautiful offense, and they're just shooting 80% in the second half, and they should be shooting 80% given the looks that they're getting.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Smith does not jump off the page in terms of his box score contribution, but his ability to navigate that extended pressure from Florida State, both when they were, they did a lot of full court pressing in this game, and it did not bother Michigan at all. And Michigan was able to break it, get into their offense, still run plays. And that's also a credit to kind of Juwan Howard's, more NBA style quick hitting offense too, where with a lot of teams, you would see a lot of really ragged possessions after having to break that many presses, starting your possession with 20 seconds on the clock instead of 25. But didn't really notice that much with Michigan. And I also thought Hunter Dickinson did a great job kind of being put in the position where often they stuck him right at midcourt to help break those presses. And he was, a couple times he even dribbled it across the midcourt line.
Davis threat once, and I was like,
that was interesting.
I was hoping that the photographer caught a photo of Davis dribbling up the court, because we've got pretty much everybody else doing that.
Yeah, I
shoot a lot of portrait mode, so it's terrible. Anyway,
yeah, I have a lot of complaints about that, but won't air them here. So there were a couple plays where, like, Michigan got a little sped up by Florida State's press. It took a couple early clock floaters that weren't ideal from the guards. But in general, I thought that those guys were probably getting criticized more than necessary, both because they were doing a hell of a job on defense against Florida State's guards. And the main thing for them was just get the ball up the court safely, initiate the offense, and I thought they did a great job of that. And for Michigan to end up with 19 assists and 9 turnovers against a team this big that plays with that much pressure, I think that says a lot.
Yeah, and just it was a layup line in the second half where Michigan was getting the ball into the paint, and then people were cutting from the outside. You have Austin Davis dropping an assist off to Shondi Brown. I think you have Dickinson dropping one off to either Brooks or Johns. It was Johns. And it just looks like they have Florida State's entire MO just completely downloaded, despite the fact that, Dickinson got a few post-up possessions, but he was 5 of 10 from the floor here. So that switching didn't hurt Florida State in the post that much, because they do it all the time and they're pretty good at dealing with it. But unlike, when Xavier Tillman era Michigan State was kind of dunking on Michigan by switching everything, Michigan had other solutions in this game.
Yeah, I mean, having Franz Wagner able to just go off the dribble and go 4 of 5 from two and just, throw in that hook shot over he's just to have somebody who's like 6'10 and able to take it off the dribble like that, it's just not a thing you see in college basketball that much. So these teams, Florida State really looked like a team that ran into a team of Michigan's caliber for the first time and was like, I guess we can't do any of this anymore. And they did not have a real plan B.
Yeah, I think Franz just hopped Scotty Barnes in the draft order.
it's quite possible. I mean, we'll, you know, NBA valuation is a whole different deal. But if you're basing it on this film, most definitely. Because Franz's passing was also way better than Scotty Barnes's in this game. And that's supposed to be kind of
his thing.
Barnes's unusual being 6'9 and also able to dish it like a point guard. But, I mean, Wagner... you know, 4 for 5 from 2, 5 assists, no turnovers, some absolutely gorgeous pocket passes. I think he was robbed of a couple of assists because Florida State hacked the guy he was passing it to.
Yes.
Or Michigan blew layups. He could have had, you know, 8-10 assists in this game pretty easily with the way he was dealing the ball around. So, I mean, this was a very egalitarian offense in terms of the way the scoring load was divvied out, but... I would say in half court, the stats don't necessarily capture how much offense Wagner was driving in this game, and it was a lot.
Yeah, he's 17% usage, and you're kind of like, was that all? Like, because it felt like he was in a lot of very prominent spots. So you mentioned that Mike Smith's numbers didn't really jump out, but the buckets he made did. So he has that and one that goes like off the very top of the backboard. And then in the first half, Michigan's stuck in a late clock situation and Wyatt Wilkes is on him. And you can see Smith's eyes light up because it's like, okay, this isn't Scotty Barnes. This is not a person named Raekwon.
He's like wiping drool from the corner of his mouth as he starts to set up his dribble.
Right. So he just pulls a step back and knocks that down. Important bucket because it took a situation where Michigan's expected value of a shot was not good and got 3 points out of the situation. So, you know, he did kind of fade into the background a little bit because of all of Florida State's length, but when he popped up in very important spots.
Yeah, and I'd have to go back and check because I slept instead of rewatching the game. I'm going to be honest, it's been a long week. I think at least a couple of his 4 misses on shots that were all relatively close to the hoop, that at least a couple of those were rebounded by Michigan, because Michigan did end up with 11 offensive rebounds in this game. And out-rebounding Florida State by percentage is, I mean, even though Florida State isn't the greatest rebounding team given their height.
They're a notoriously bad defensive rebounding team, but keeping them to 9 offensive rebounds is well under their season average offensively.
It's impressive. And that's probably the area where switching did hurt FSU was,
yeah,
with Michigan being able to grab those boards where, you know, you've got a guard trying to box out Hunter Dickinson or Brandon Johns.
Or Sean D. Brown swooping in from the outside like a magnificent winged beast.
Yes. Yeah, he's done that a few times this year because he had the double putback against Ohio State and the... I think it was a putback dunk against Maryland, a tip slam. He's a handful. I mean, you could see how well coached Michigan was to handle a team that switches, you know, just even when shots weren't falling, you could see that they were kind of doing the right things. And then in the second half, it just really all clicked. And It was just exquisite basketball to watch, really.
Yeah, and Brown puts up 12 points on 6 shooting possessions, so his second straight extremely efficient game. And with livers out, like having an efficient Sean D. Brown is very important because they need someone to hit those shots. And you know, one of the things that he did is he hit a shot that was pretty heavily contested, also kind of late in the shot clock, right after Smith knocked his down. And that's something that I think that we should really appreciate about his game is that, you know, those hesitation shots that some people put up, that's not Sean D. Brown. And also because of his height, because of his lift, and because of his lack of hesitation, he's able to get off good 3-pointers in situations where some other guys would have to pull it down and possibly drive into like one of those off the dribble 2-pointers that's not as good of a shot.
Yeah, I was one of my closest friends is a high school basketball coach, and we were debriefing after the game last night, and something that came up was just, you know, I mean, Sean D. Brown has this kind of, you know, like freshman Zach Irvin level, you know, like if he's getting the shot, getting the ball in the right position, you know the shot's going up, but Not necessarily like that freshman. I mean, freshman Zach Ervin was good, but Brown's ability to do that without taking bad shots is pretty remarkable. And to your point about his ability to hit shots of people in his face, he is in the 98th percentile on synergy on guarded catch and shoot opportunities. He is 23 of 43 for a 77.9 effective field goal percentage.
Wow.
On contested catch and shoot jumpers, that's bonkers. That's completely bonkers. So the fact that, and I think a lot of that has to do with his shot looks exactly the same whether it's contested or uncontested. He's going up. It has the same form. He is not hesitating. He's got the size and lift to get it off over defenders. And he just does a great job of ignoring the guy in front of him. And that is, I mean, so much of a closeout is just trying to catch the attention of the shooter because people don't block jump shots that often. And any other contest that actually affects the shot is usually a foul. So it's mostly about just, you know, getting in the shooter's head a little bit, impacting that motion, making them think about the fact that you're there. And for whatever, Shawnee Brown is able to just block out the fact that a defender is there better than almost anybody I've seen. And it really shows on, like, that corner three that he hits late in the shot clock where there's a defender closing out, but it's just a tiny bit late. And as long as that dude can't block the shot, it does not matter to Shawnee Brown.
Yes, sir. All right, we got anything else about this game, or is it time to talk UCLA?
I mean, woo?
All right, let's take a break, come back, talk UCLA.
UCLA. 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing is three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Win or lose this season, stop into Information Entropy and make sure that you have a good time on game day. First-time customers can light up a free pre-roll and enjoy the quality cannabis products that this shop has to offer. Located 2 miles away from the Big House and accessible to ages 21+, find Information Entropy at 1115 Broadway, across from the Kellogg Eye Center off Plymouth Road. They don't want to hear the words go green over there, but they are happy to help you smoke it. Check them out at Information Entropy.
Midnight move, all night groove.
13-6 in Pac-12 play, a fact that now looks considerably more impressive. they do have a couple of common opponents, so they lost 77-70 to Ohio State in Cleveland in December, and then they beat Michigan State in OT in the first round of the tournament. And they did kind of go on a losing streak.
The what round of what tournament?
Sorry, the play-in round of the tournament. Thank you. They had a losing streak to end the year that everybody was kind of pointing at and saying, okay, well, maybe these guys aren't very good. That doesn't look so bad now because it's at Colorado, who's the number 9 team in KenPom and plays at elevation, at Oregon, and home in a one-point loss against USC. Now, losing to Oregon State in overtime in the Pac-12 conference tournament, not great, but they're still around.
Yeah, I mean, they're an Elite Eight team, I guess.
With the best three-point luck possibly in recent tournament history.
You know.
But you're watching this Alabama game, and you're like, yes, I would like UCLA to win this game just for matchup issues.
Yeah. Alabama just, I mean, they were a scary opponent kind of no matter how they performed in any of these games because of their three-point heavy approach, which is kind of understating it, and the fact that they could just, you know, at any time kind of flamethrower a team out of the building.
Yeah.
Whereas with UCLA, it's basically Jaime Jaquez and Johnny Juzang doing a lot of one-on-one stuff, kind of similar to LSU a little bit in that regard. They also have a 6'9", 260-ish pound center who's not at all a stretch, kind of plugs up their spacing a lot on offense when they don't bring him out, and isn't, I mean, he's a good but not incredible defensive player. And, I mean, the story of the Alabama game in large part was that Mick Cronin was playing this guy instead of going small. When UCLA was going small, they were really controlling this game, and then Mick Cronin kind of went back to, I don't know, just how he prefers to play basketball no matter how the game's actually going, and let Alabama back into it. But they don't really have backup big options. Also have a 5'11 point guard who can't shoot. I don't know. Looking at this matchup, UCLA has also had absurd free throw luck through this tournament, including in this Alabama game. Alabama shoots 11 for 25 from the line, including some absolute killers down the stretch. Abilene Christian was 9 for 11, but that doesn't matter because they're freaking Abilene Christian. That was their previous game. And BYU was 9 for 16 from the line in their first round game. Feels like UCLA has gotten a little fortunate to get here, both in terms of the path and the way that these games played out.
Well, partially because they've been playing well in the tournament, and also the Pac-12 has been rampant. They've moved up from 45th when the tournament started to 16th on KenPom. So you're looking at the 11 next to their seed, and you're like, oh, that's great. We're going to stomp these guys. But they're now ranked like a 4 or 5 seed. So
yeah, no, they are. I mean, this isn't like catching Oregon State, who's still hanging down at 43rd despite the incredible Pac-12 surge in all analytics across the board at this point.
Yeah,
because of the tournament. I mean, USC is a 6 seed that is number 6 in the country now and looks quite deserving of that. Good Lord. But at the same time, I mean, this feels like a matchup that plays largely into Michigan's hands. This is a team that relies a fair amount on one-on-one creation by guys who are 6'6". And Michigan has a number of defenders to throw at those guys. I mean, and you know, either Jaquez or Juzang is going to catch Franz Wagner, and that's going to be quite the experience for that player. And
yeah, the only concern is they do have 3 6'6" guys. So one of those guys is going to get Eli Brooks. I haven't looked at the synergy stuff to see if any of these guys are particularly contest immune and can just pull up. And Jaquez and Jules Bernard, who's the third 6'6 guy, are 40% three-point shooters. So, I mean, UCLA, we played another team. I forget who it was that was weird like this, where they're really good at shooting threes. They're 34th in the country, and they're like 300th at getting them off.
Yeah, I mean, I think LSU was pretty similar to that, if I remember correctly.
Yes, that's correct.
But, yeah, I'm pulling up Synergy stuff as we speak to try to see how this plays out. But I think Michigan is going to be able to hide. I mean, they don't even need to hide Brooks necessarily, and but they'll be able to play Brooks on one of the 6'6 guys, because Jules Bernard is mostly a spot up guy, and that's the third 6'6 dude in their starting lineup. And then you'll be able to have, you know, Johns and Wagner on Jaquez and Juzang in whatever order they want there. And Tiger Campbell is a great matchup for Mike Smith, mm-hmm. because 5'11 guy who can't shoot. And then on the other end, they're going to have to double Hunter Dickinson, because Cody Riley's 6'9". So that's just not going to work for them. Hunter Dickinson is too big. And also, they're going to want to try to keep Riley out of foul trouble as much as they can. He had 3 fouls in 18 minutes against BYU. He's prone to picking up fouls. Alabama does not have an inside force to really test that. But I'd expect Michigan to go pretty hard on the inside-outside stuff and the high-low stuff, because, I think they're going to be able to live in the paint against this team.
Yeah, so whoever is going to be checking Brandon Johns is going to be giving up at least 20 pounds, right? And we've seen him kind of develop that post game. So I think the high low stuff is something that is going to work, because Michigan has a size advantage at the 4. They have a size advantage at the 5. And this team is like the number 55 defense in KenPom. So they can play some offense, but they're not very good defending the basket. They don't turn opponents over. So, you know, this is a situation where if Michigan is able to do anything like they were able to do against Florida State, they're going to get good looks up at the bucket with a team that doesn't really have a rim protector.
Yeah, I mean, you go into Synergy, and UCLA, because they often play small, and also because they don't have a major rim protector, but, you know, they have athletes. They're 90th percentile in transition defense. They're 21st percentile in half-court defense. And they do not have, they barely run any zone, less than 3% of the time. So this is a team that, you know, in terms of having to prep on a short turnaround, like, this is going to be much more difficult for Mick Cronin to prepare for Michigan than for Juwan Howard to prepare for UCLA.
Yeah, and going back to that Ohio State game, so Zed Key and EJ Liddell combined for 20 points on 15 shooting possessions, and didn't have any turnovers. So those guys aren't Hunter Dickinson as post players, but they were fairly effective in their situations, and they're, you know, 6'8 and 6'7. So I think this is a situation where they're going to have to double Hunter, and then Michigan's going to get open looks from three, and then it's going to be like the LSU game where they're going to get a lot of looks at the basket, and they just got to convert them.
Yeah, because when you look at, isolation defense is generally a very good measure of just like how solid are your one-on-one defenders. And UCLA is in the 7th percentile against isolations. They actually give up significantly more points against ISOs than pick and rolls. Even when you include passes. This is a defense that might have a lot of trouble slowing down Franz Wagner, because between Dickinson and Wagner and Johns. Okay, that's 3 out of 5 in the starting lineup. I don't know how they defend these guys.
I
like this matchup.
This is not the team that Mick Cronin wanted to be going this deep into the tournament with. They had Jalen Hill, who was like their backup center.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It was like they were a team that used more bigs. And they had another center, Chris Smith, who's out for the year too. So like he's been forced to play small. And you guys mentioned Cody Riley already, but he's like a top 50 player, and he can't really leave him in all the time. He pulls him with 2 fouls all the time, so he hasn't fouled out very often. But he's spending a significant time on the bench, and Cronin he's not a small ball guy, but they have to play a lot of minutes, with the tallest guy on the court being 6'6".
And their offense is pretty janky. So, they're in the 300s in number of shots they attempt at the rim, and they take a lot of mid-range. Now, they're good at the mid-range. They're 42%, so there is a possibility of that, like, Rocket Watts game where they're just taking mid-range stuff and it's going down. But that's the kind of thing that I think you would worry about, is they're just hitting contested twos and your offense isn't keeping up. But I feel like, you know, this is the number 55 offense on KenPom, right? So that's one of the worst offenses in the Big Ten. I mean,
defense you mean. Ten,
yeah. So Penn State, Michigan State, Minnesota, that's what we're talking about here in terms of adjusted defenses.
Yeah, and this is a team that gives up a lot of three-point attempts and hasn't really gotten lucky with them, but, you know, is right at average in terms of how well opponents make them. And they're also dead average at two-point defense. So they've propped up their defense with good defensive rebounding and not fouling. And I think a decent part of the not fouling is just because, especially since their backup big situation has been kind of wiped out, you know, they're just not going to contest that much at the hoop. So they do a decent job of making teams have to create one-on-one. They're in the top 100 in opponent assist rate. But, I mean, I mentioned the isolation stats earlier. Opponents can create one-on-one against this team. So and when you go in, I think the worry with this team in terms of being able to, you know, put a mismatch out there would be if they went small and were really able to go five out and put Hunter Dickinson in some bad spots. But they still have a non-shooter on the floor in Tiger Campbell, so I think Michigan might be able to even throw out some matchup zone stuff and be able to keep Hunter Dickinson in the paint when UCLA does that. And when you look at their splits with Cody Riley off the court, their two-point defense gets 5 percentage points worse. So they have a bit of an offense-defense choice to make, it looks like, in this game. And I don't know if there's a winning choice to make there.
All right. So that sounds like we're fairly confident about the outcome of this one. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of stuff that can go wrong in one single game, but much preferable to Alabama. There's like a 3.5-point KenPom gap between the two teams, which is a pretty serious gap. So good on Alabama for missing all their free throws.
Yeah, thank you for that.
I can't believe we went through the whole section without mentioning Tiger Campbell's hair, though, because that's just incredible.
We are going to have an amazing just matchup between Mike Smith and Tiger Campbell, because they they are both the same height. Their hair is about the same height. It's going to be visually spectacular.
You know that moment in the Florida State game where Hunter Dickinson kind of got tangled up with a Florida State player and they had to stop the game?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's going to happen with the two-point and it's going to be amazing.
It's the untangling process. Take hours.
That may be, maybe we'll try to avoid that. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, and discuss the ends of a couple of seasons we've been following. Unfortunate ends.
This is Matt Demarest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products, No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
approximately $100,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Yeah! 2021 is finally here, and there's no better way to celebrate the new year than with some new gear. Our local friends at Underground Printing have all your custom apparel needs covered, whether it's breathable polos with your logo or new fleece jackets for your group. UGP works with customers big and small. Choose from their extensive catalog with options for every budget, including premium brands like Nike, Carhartt, Yeti, The North Face, and more. Underground Printing has three convenient Ann Arbor locations, or check them out at undergroundprinting.com.
So I guess we'll start with the team that actually played a game. The women's basketball team takes Baylor to overtime in the Sweet 16 and can't quite get over the hump.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to be upset after that one because this was one of the best games of the year. I mean, just in, you know, either gender. This was a spectacular basketball game. Michigan was not supposed to be this close at all. Her hoop stats, which is the women's basketball equivalent of KenPom, had the margin of 12 points. And Michigan's win probability hanging around 10% on a neutral court. And for them to not just take Baylor to overtime, but do it in a way that did not look at all fluky. I mean, they looked like they belonged out there. And they did it with Naz Hillman only putting up, I think, 14-7 in this game, which is well below her normal production. But, you know, Baylor's a team that's huge up front.
It's just hard to get it into her.
Yeah, and they, you know, and their All-American literally did not miss a shot from the field. And Michigan was still able to take this to over. And those were not easy shots. She's not known as a great jump shooter, and she was hitting a lot of long twos, even hit a pull-up three, which is not her game. So for Michigan to take, you know, that kind of, you know, if you told me that, you know, Nalissa Smith goes off for, 13-for-13 from the field, I'd be like, well, it was a good season, and I'm going to not watch this because Michigan's about to lose by 30.
Yeah.
Especially when you add in Naz Hillman's stat line to that. And instead, you have now Michigan coming off of beating Tennessee to reach their first ever Sweet 16, and then taking the reigning national champion to the wire, and a team that may very well win the national championship this year, in a nationally televised game on ABC. I don't think you can overstate how important the last two weekends were to the program.
Yeah, and if you, I mean, I know Tennessee isn't what they were under Pat Summitt, but it was. I looked at the bracket at one point, and it was like Tennessee, Baylor, UConn. It's like, all right, you beat Mike Tyson. Here's Mecha Mike Tyson. All right, you beat Mecha Mike Tyson. Here's Super Mecha Mike Tyson. So just kind of being on the same plane as a couple of those teams, obviously they didn't get to UConn, is something that you couldn't say about this program before.
No, and this also comes in line with, well, Maryland was upset by Texas, and Indiana won their game quite decisively to reach the Elite Eight. So the Big Ten is starting to take some real steps forward, it seems like. And that, I mean, this is a situation where you want to actually root for the conference as a whole, because the Big Ten needs to establish itself as a true power women's basketball conference and not just Maryland, sometimes Ohio State, and then everybody else. So this was a big performance, not just for Michigan, but to have this weekend happen in the Big Ten too. There's a lot of kind of legitimizing going on all around the place right now. And it's with Michigan picking up their recruiting, they got three commits who were on the McDonald's All-American watch list. They've got a chance to really take another step forward here, especially with Naz Hillman probably coming back. She's certainly talking like, you know, they're going at another run next year. So it seems like there's a pretty good chance to pretty much bring back most of this team and really push for a protected seed and a easier path next year than having to go through Tennessee and Baylor in the first three games.
It kind of reminded me of the 2009 basketball team with Beilein, where like that was the team that that beat Clemson in the first round, which they were not expected to, and then kind of made it a game against Blake Griffin in Oklahoma. Except for, you know, this team actually got past that and got to the Sweet 16 itself. But they were also doing it without their point guard because Dilk's been out with the whole playoff. So like, going toe-to-toe with Baylor, I mean, that I bring up that Beilein team because that was a team that kind of established Beilein as like, okay, this program's for real. They're going to the tournament every year. They're just going to get better. And that was the kind of feel that you got out of this women's team that they kind of surprised a lot of people nationally. I think they're in the talk now as like one of those up-and-coming programs that, you know, there's not a spot for you on Tennessee or UConn, there's a spot for you in Michigan.
All right, the other team whose season came to an end that we track on this podcast is the hockey team, which was booted from the hockey tournament thanks to a positive COVID test, which may have been for the best, because the next night, North Dakota and Minnesota Duluth played a 5 overtime game.
Yeah.
And I might have died.
But so, North Dakota lost. It might have been a glorious death.
And now the Frozen Four is three teams that have never won a national championship and Minnesota Duluth. So at least it's not, you know, Boston College and Minnesota. But yeah, like the one seeds all went down, I think, because that's what happens in single elimination hockey when goalies are huge. I mean, the best thing you can say about the tournament is that they didn't have to turn any fans away from the regionals.
Hey-o.
So, very frustrating end to a season that is hard to judge because you don't really have a whole lot of... I mean, the only intra-conference play that you got was Wisconsin losing to Bemidji and then Minnesota going out in the tournament, but that's like, you know, two games, right? So you really have no idea where the Big Ten stood in relation to the rest of college hockey. So they finished like third. They're just snake bit the whole year. They play really well, and then their record doesn't necessarily reflect it. And now it's all about who stays and who goes. So Cam York is probably gone because that was just seemed like the plan. He was going to do 2 years, and then he was going to sign. So that's fine. They have three defensemen that they're going to try to bring in. And then it's like, is Owen Power the top pick in the draft? If so, does he get immediately signed? Same with Kent Johnson, because he's probably going to go in the top five. And usually Michigan has historically been able to get a year after a draft year for a guy who's getting drafted after being on campus. But usually those guys are going, 13th or 15th. They're not going in the top 10. So it'll be interesting to see. I think that they're going to get some of these guys back. Like, I think Bortolo will be back. I think Brisson will be back. I think Kent Johnson will probably be back too, because he just clearly needs like a year to fill out and get more powerful and be able to start winning some puck battles in the corners. But one thing that kind of stood out about Wisconsin and Minnesota, who were, a notch above Michigan this year, is that you look at their top scorers and they're not literally all freshmen like Michigan's were. So just get a little continuity. Don't lose everybody. Bring in some more talent next year, and I think you're going to see them be at or near the top of college hockey. There you go.
Yep. I guess the last thing we should bring up is Giles Jackson is in the transfer portal, which...
It's a bummer, man.
This hurts bloggers more than the team, I think, because we adore that guy, and obviously he was one of the best kick returners out there. Not a whole lot of guys that make Alabama, kick it out of bounds or just boot it up in the air because they don't want to kick that guy anymore. But, yeah. Michigan still has Samra still. They have A.J. Henning. They have Donovan Edwards, who, if practice reports can be believed, has been doing a lot of the same kind of things. And, they also have plenty of fast receivers. Xavier Worthy can play that too. So it's not like the team is lacking for quick athletic guys. It's just I love Jackson. I hate to lose that guy.
Well, we'll always have his touchdown return against Indiana.
Right.
Which was the most emphatically overturned call in the history of college football.
It's still good in our hearts.
Yeah, I put that up on the site again today. Just, I love that Indiana fan at the end going like, what? What?
People are now replying to the auto post of football things saying, read the room. So that's the situation with football.
Basketball school, baby!
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be talking about a Final Four for Juwan Howard in his first tournament in a couple days.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher. Is anyone still coming for this banner? Anybody?